The Watson Weekly is sponsored by Avalara. For e-commerce brands, tax compliance gets more complicated with every new channel, state, product, and market. Avalara Agentic Tax and Compliance helps automate the work behind the scenes so merchants can deliver a smoother customer experience. With accurate tax calculation at checkout, clearer visibility into tariffs and duties, and fewer surprises for customers when their order arrives. Avalara works with e-commerce platforms like Shopify, BigCommerce, WooCommerce, and more, helping teams manage compliance faster and scale with more confidence. To learn more about Avalara's e-commerce compliance solutions and explore resources built for growing e-commerce brands, go to avalara.watsonweekly.com for more details. It's May 18th, 2026, and this is the Watson Weekly, your essential e-commerce digest. Today on our show, Amazon Now, the quiet squeeze on quick commerce. eBay rejects unsolicited proposal from GameStop. OpenAI launches a deployment company. And a Shopify Enterprise webinar series. And finally, the Investor Minute, which contains five items this week from the world of venture capital, acquisitions, and IPOs. On June 4th, 11th, and 18th, I'll be hosting a Shopify Enterprise webinar series with operators who talk real. The series is sponsored by Avalara and Domain. To register, go to watsonweekly.com/events. This is not sponsored by Shopify and will contain content that executives and founders will want to hear. But first, in our shopping cart full of news, Amazon Now, the quiet squeeze on quick commerce. Amazon made it official. As of last Tuesday, if you live in about one of a dozen American cities, you can get groceries, AirPods, or a bottle of laundry detergent dropped to your door in 30 minutes. They're calling it Amazon Now. The launch cities at the moment are Atlanta, Dallas-Fort Worth, Philly, and Seattle, expanding soon to Austin, Denver, Houston, Minneapolis, Orlando, Oklahoma City, and Phoenix. Amazon says it will reach tens of millions of customers by year's end. None of this is exactly a surprise. Amazon started piloting 30-minute delivery in Seattle and Philadelphia way back in December 2025. What's new is the scale and the branding. Amazon Now is a product now, and it's pointed straight at DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Instacart. And I think the pricing is where it gets interesting. Prime members can pay $3.99 per order. Non-Prime members pay $13.99. Orders under $15 get a small order fee on top, $2 for Prime, $4 for everyone else. And that's the whole structure. No surge pricing, no service fee, no expected tip, and no marked up grocery prices. If you compare that to Instacart, where the same day order can carry a delivery fee, a service fee, a tip, per item markup, you don't notice until you check the total. Amazon's pitch to a Prime member is pretty blunt. We already have your money, and here's another reason not to leave. How are they pulling it off? Smaller fulfillment centers closer to where people live. Less selection per location, but shorter distances and faster routes. It comes down to real estate. And a bit of context on the scale Amazon's already running at. In 2025, Prime members got more than 13 billion items delivered same day or next day worldwide. 8 billion of those were in the United States, up 30% year over year. Amazon also runs 1 hour and 3 hour delivery on over 90,000 products, plus a drone delivery experiment in 8 US locations. So what does Amazon Now actually mean? Probably the slow squeeze of independent grocery delivery. DoorDash and Instacart still have better restaurant integrations, but on the boring stuff, toothpaste, paper towels, that gallon of milk you forgot at the store, Amazon is now structurally cheaper for anyone who already pays for Prime, which is a lot of American households. If you're a Prime member, your shopping habits are about to shift again, and whether you notice it or not. If you're a competitor, now you have a problem that doesn't have an obvious answer unless you're a Walmart. Our second story. eBay rejects unsolicited proposal from GameStop. Monday morning, May 12th, the company issued a press release rejecting an unsolicited acquisition proposal from GameStop. Yes, GameStop. the video game retailer Ryan Cohen turned into a holding company for a pile of cash and a hunt for something to buy. And he wanted to buy eBay. The rejection letter is signed by Paul Pressler, eBay's chairman, addressed straight to Cohen. The language stays polite from a corporate point of view, but the substance is harsh. The board calls the proposal neither credible nor attractive, then lists six reasons for passing, and they're kind of worth hearing in order. First is eBay's standalone prospects. Second, uncertainty around GameStop's financing. Third, the impact on eBay's long-term growth and profitability. Fourth, the leverage, operational risks, and leadership structure of a combined entity. Fifth, valuation implications. And sixth, GameStop governance and executive incentives. Look at that list and notice what's missing. Price isn't on it. And most of these reasons, whether GameStop can actually finance the deal and whether anyone actually trusts it to run what it would acquire. For context, eBay enabled close to $80 billion in gross merchandise volume in 2025. They're founded in 1995, operates more than 190 markets. And after years of being written off as the dull grandfather of online marketplaces, it spent the last few quarters tightening its strategy and consistently returning cash to shareholders. GameStop's recent story is a little different. Most of what's interesting on the balance sheet is the cash that arrived from the meme stock years. Anyone remember Roaring Kitty? Cohen has been hunting for a target for a while, and this is his swing. What's new? Cohen has three options. Walk away, come back with better financing and a higher number, or go hostile, taking the offer straight to eBay shareholders. And the release went out Monday. It's Thursday last week, not enough time to know which way Ryan Cohen will go. But if you read the tone of the board letter again, neither credible nor attractive, chairmen don't write phrases like that unless they want the rejection on the record. This isn't a board bracing for a fight. It's a board daring Cohen to start one. So watch both share prices this week. Our third story, OpenAI launches a deployment company. Last Monday, OpenAI announced a new subsidiary. It doesn't look like an OpenAI subsidiary and kind of looks like Accenture. OpenAI deployment company, and why the most interesting thing about it was who paid for it. So here's what landed on May 11th. OpenAI launched a standalone business unit called the OpenAI Deployment Company, DeployCo, internally. $4 billion in opening funding, $14 billion valuation. OpenAI keeps majority control. The leading investor is TPG, Advent, Bain Capital, and Brookfield are also co-lead founders. The longer list runs through Goldman Sachs, SoftBank, Warburg Pincus, BBVA, and several more. The three names on the cap table that are worth circling include Bain & Company, Capgemini, and McKinsey, three consulting firms whose checks into a company that entire purpose is to maybe eliminate consulting. On day one, DeployCo also absorbs Tomorrow, a 2.5-year-old applied AI firm with about 150-year engineers and a client list that includes Tesco, Virgin Atlantic, Red Bull, and Mattel. Those engineers carry a title that did not exist 5 years ago, Forward Deployed Engineer, or FDE. This is the new hot term in Silicon Valley, so you better get used to it. The model is borrowed straight from Palantir. You don't just sell software, you send a person into the field, into the building, to rebuild the workflow around the software. So why now? There are kind of two reasons. First is OpenAI has been losing enterprise ground to Anthropic. Fiji Simo, OpenAI's CEO of applications, told staff a few weeks ago that Anthropic's games were a wake-up call and that the company could not afford to be distracted by side quests. A week before DeployCo launched, Anthropic announced its own $1.5 billion enterprise joint venture. Second, the investor list is itself a sales channel. OpenAI's announcement notes that its partners sponsor more than 2,000 businesses worldwide. Brookfield alone committed $500 million and plans to roll DeployCo into its portfolio. Every PE-owned company in the network is a potential client, and every client is a feedback loop on what enterprise deployment actually looks like. The thesis underneath all this is that the bottleneck in enterprise AI is no longer the model. It's the wiring, permissions, governance, legacy systems, and the politics of who owns the workflow. None of this just gets solved by shipping a new API. And one thing I am kind of watching is McKinsey, Bain, and Capgemini funded kind of a competitor. That's either a hedge or something more revealing about how the consulting industry will evolve into the next generation. And our last story, new Shopify Enterprise webinar series from the Watson Weekly. We're launching 3 webinars in June about moving enterprise brands onto Shopify, and we have a sponsor list and a stacked panel. Also, I have a thesis that won't make Shopify's marketing team all that happy. Moving to Shopify doesn't fix your business. It can give you a better platform to run the business you already have. Those are 2 different things, and most operators figuring out before too late. The series is called The Big Green Bag of Promise. 3 episodes, real operators, no keynote varnish. Episode 1 is the math. Most direct-to-consumer brands are running 50 to 70% gross margins and squeezing 10 to 15% EBITDA out of that in a good year. Tech costs are climbing. Media costs are climbing. Growth used to paper over operational sloppiness. It doesn't anymore. Many brands are up to 5 to 10% if you're lucky. In that environment, the cost savings pitch for a platform migration is mostly a myth. Scott Lux from Stanley 1913 will say so. Alara Verrett from Reitmans, 3 weeks post-launch with 400 stores across Canada, will tell you the platform moves faster than the people running on it. Renee Halverson from MarineLayer scaled the brand from 10 million to 100 million on Shopify, and now she's dealing with what happens when a 10-year-old theme is so outdated that the new capabilities she now have feel less like a gift and more like a fire hose. Episode 2 is about unified commerce, the phrase that everybody wants and nobody defines. It means a customer can buy online and return in store without your system melting. It means your inventory is honest before you promise it. It means buy online, pick up in store works on a Tuesday when a customer has driven 20 minutes for an order your system thinks exists. Episode 3 is more about design and IT dependency. This is one a lot of operators skip. The uncomfortable question is whether your organization will actually commit budget and decision rights to design, or whether you take all that Shopify flexibility and build another site that looks just like everyone else's. My argument is that the era of differentiating through bleeding edge, headless front ends is over for most brands. Conversion wins on best practices, and the differentiators now are storytelling, merchandising, and brand identity. The question is whether your tech setup enables that to work or quietly gets in the way. Webinars run on June 4th, 11th, and 18th, 12:30 p.m. Eastern. If you register for one, you get all 3. Our link is in the show notes, or follow watsonweekly.com/events and go sign up. It's that time, friends, for our Investor Minute. We have 5 items on the menu today. First, Copilot Kit announced it's raised $27 million for an AGUI protocol. What a time to be alive. Story 2. Cognizant announced that it's acquired Astreya for about $600 million. The data center race is just getting started. Story 3. District announced it's raised $14.7 million in seed funding. Building marketplaces are hard, but community marketplaces are even harder. Story 4. Shopify subscription consolidation. Recharge announced it's acquired competitor Skio for $105 million, who raised only $5 million in funding. Congrats to both sides. And finally, PayPal announced it's undergoing a 3-business reorganization. The company will operate 3 separate businesses: checkout solutions and PayPal, consumer financial services and Venmo, and payment services and crypto. When do you think PayPal sells Venmo? That's all for this week. Till next time, Watsonians. Hi, I'm Rick Watson, CEO and founder of RMW Commerce Consulting and host of the Watson Weekly Podcast, your essential e-commerce digest. I write a newsletter you can subscribe to at watsonweekly.com also, and you can find the podcast there too.